All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
I'm Lou Nolan. You're listening to Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What is happening, Nasty?
What's up, Rigorelia?
This is it.
Just coming up on the last game of the season for the Flyers. And but last week, had a great time at our tailgate.
Yeah,
thank
a lot
you
of fun
for coming out.
It's a beautiful day.
It was awesome. I mean, the only thing that did surprise me was Debo in his little spandex shorts
out there,
suntanning.
Yeah.
But you know what did attract the women? The women were coming around. And it did.
You got to get to those hard-to-reach places.
You do. Debo was feeling it.
he was.
And, you know, Elvis won the Tovey Sauce Challenge.
Yeah, he did.
And, you know,
he's lighting it up.
He kept asking me, like, well, you know, what do I get? I'm like, well, someone else might have won something better, but you're going to get the six count number three at Chick-fil-A. Something you have
of
every
course,
day, but that's
yeah.
what you're getting. But he was happy with it. So,
oh yeah.
But it was a lot of fun, man. It really was. Beautiful day. Met some new friends that came over and said hello. And Neil Little showed up.
Yeah, Litz, man. Good to see him and his
baller disappeared. He missed when the only thing it was bad about baller disappearing was he missed Sid and Jeff Carter coming over taking a couple shots with us. Right off the bus in their suits, but maybe somebody got it on film. We'll try to track that down for you.
It's got to be footage
Appreciate
somewhere.
It, guys.
It's got to be some footage somewhere.
Somewhere. Yeah. Somebody's got
Someone
it.
Someone had
it for Yeah. Maybe Paul Garofalo got it for us.
It was a good time. Yeah. Again, nice smoking hot day. I actually expected to see a little more action in the parking lots, considering it was such a nice day. But the Flyers aren't exactly rocking and rolling, and there's no playoff push here, so I understand.
They rock and rolled that day, though.
Yeah, they did. You're right.
Actually played well that day. But you're right. Yeah, I think that had something to do with it.
Definitely. But, down to one game to go, so maybe it's a relief for Flyer fans for this year and putting a period on the end of the season.
Yeah.
And then retooling.
It's been a long one.
It's been a long one. It's been a long season. I feel like we said the same thing over and over and over again.
Almost two seasons.
Yeah, two seasons in a row. Yeah.
Now, so it's going to get better, though. We know that.
But all right, Nas, with the playoffs approaching, we're going to be firing up our playoff bracket challenge again.
Yes.
So we'll be throwing in our picks and a chance to win a Nasty Knuckles signed jersey.
Yes.
So stay tuned. We'll be throwing up the links on our social media to enter. Should be fun.
Yes.
Got destroyed last year, but try again this year.
It's going to be interesting, the playoffs this year. Yeah, so no it'll doubt. Be fun to see the brackets.
But I think we're ready to rock. Episode 72, Nast, in the books. Appreciate Lou hopping on.
Yep.
This episode was presented to you by our good friends at Curaleaf, curaleaf.com, a medical marijuana dispensary, Pennsylvania. Check them out. Knowledgeable, helpful staff for all your pain, anxiety, and just maintenance needs. Check them out at curaleaf.com. Episode 72. Let's go.
Let's go.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Suttlemeyer. And this week, we have an absolute legend in Philadelphia. 50 years as the Philadelphia Flyers public address announcer, and much more than that, Mr. Lou Nolan. Lou, for the second time today, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be welcomed more than one time, actually.
Yes.
It's great to be here and be on with you two guys, two of my favorite people. Tell a few stories.
Yes.
Talk about things and how I managed to get to 50, and you know, all I wanted to do was have a second game, as you well know. So it worked, and the third and the fourth, and then a fifth year, sixth year. So it worked out. I'm pleased as punch to be here.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Absolutely,
man.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming by. And quite the feat, 50 years in any business is quite an accomplishment. So props to you for sticking with it and staying close to your passion and being a presence in the city of Philadelphia.
Well, yeah. As you well know as a player and you as somebody in the staff that makes sure everybody's got what they need, there are days when you don't want to go.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and you say, oh, man, I feel like shit. But you still go, and you're a professional, so it's important that you get there and do you the best job you can. With me, it's just all I ever wanted to do was to treat the players right, make sure that I didn't mispronounce their names, and tell the fans what happened. Many of them could see. Many of them realized that they're two assists behind because they're watching the puck. But that's all I really wanted to do. And so far, so good.
Yeah, very good, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so, too. Pretty impressive. Talk about how it all began. I know you think you worked in the press box at one point and then eventually found your way down.
Yeah, I did. It goes back to a love of the game created by me being a rink rat back in the minor league days when there was a team up at 46th and Market Street in Philly called the Ramblers. I was a grade school kid and a classmate of mine. His uncle was the was a minor official, off-ice official. He was the first timekeeper for the Flyers, by the way.
Oh, wow.
His name was George Lennon, the young guy and the uncle. And we went up there Friday nights, and he went to work, and we just ran around the place and then skated afterward. Took the sticks that were broken home and taped them up and went out and played street hockey. And then I realized that there was hockey on television. I don't know what day it was on, but once a week. With the original six teams, and so I watched them, and I learned a little bit about it, enough to make myself dangerous. Then I used to go to Margate in the summers with guys and girls, and we'd run around and go dancing and do all the good things that we all love to do.
You're a dancer.
Met a guy named Joe Cadillac, who was the first PR director, who worked for the Daily News and got the job, and you know, I said, hey, if you need anybody to help you, I'll help you. You know, we were out having a cocktail. I said, yeah, I'll help you. So we'll see. He says, come to a cocktail party. And next thing you know, I'm running the press box and handing out stats to guys and developing forms because the original six guys, the writers there, were smarter than the PR departments with the game and been around so long. They didn't need forums. They saw it all. And our guys, we just tried to portion the information out to as many people as we could for the publicity in the early years of the team. You know, and it went from small crowds to medium crowds to sellouts for a long time. And I really attribute a lot of that to what we developed in there. So I did that for 5 years. The announcer left to go with the World Hockey Association team that was here in Philly, the Blazers. And I think Bernie played with that team.
Yeah.
And they moved to Vancouver. Bernie went to Miami or Toronto or somewhere. And next thing you know, I'm down doing the announcing there. You know, Lou Sheinfeld, who was number two guy for Ed Snyder, he said, come on in and do an audition. Well, they were putting the third level on the spectrum, hanging it from the side, cantilever kind of deal. And, you know, we I asked the guys to turn the crane down. They had the crane going, you know, and they're lifting pieces of things up. And I just said, excuse me, guys, you know, I have an important audition here. Would you mind turning the crane off? Ying-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding. So they did. They turned the crane off. And I was always thankful of that. And Sheinfeld said, well, you got it. You know, you got the job. So season started. And, you know, I remember the first game I did, I got hit with a bucket of pucks. Kept the pucks in ice. Now we got freezers.
Right, yeah, right. You
know? Hey, and they got to be a certain temperature.
That's right.
Of course.
And everything's different. But there, it was like throw the pucks in, throw ice in, and whatever happened, happened. Seemed to be good enough then. I don't know why it's not good enough now. In any event, so I'm glad that it happened. I enjoyed it. I think the guy that threw them was Dennis O'Brien, played with Minnesota. And Bob Kelly was the guy he was mad at.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, maybe. Right? Maybe. I think it was Kelly. I'm not sure exactly. But, you know, we had a good time there, and 1 year became two and five and 10. And, you know, next thing I know, I'm looking at 50 and the team's saying, we're going to have a night for you. I said, whoa. Then the guys wore jerseys with my number 50 on the back of my name on them for warm-up.
I know. I
said, super cool.
That was awesome.
I presented one to me.
Yeah.
You know, a nice authentic tie down and everything else.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It's great.
So it was an honor. It's been a great ride, and I'm still enjoying it, and I intend to do it as long as I can before they call me in and say, hey, you got to make a change.
Yeah.
Which is inevitable. Unless I screw up, I'll know.
Yeah, right.
I'll know.
Yeah, super impressive. And I'd read somewhere that you had a fear of speaking. When did you find your voice, not just, you know, speaking, but like actually having the confidence to come out of your shell and put yourself out there?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was a freshman in high school, West Catholic, I was scared of public speaking. And it became my turn. You know, you sit there and they call the guys up one by one to read what they got or to make a presentation, and you say, and if it's your turn, you say, maybe they won't know I'm here. And he called on me, and I went up there, and, you know, like I just stood there, and all the guys were quiet, and everything was quiet. Yeah. And he finally said, okay, sit down. And I just clammed up. I couldn't do it. I think that experience, I pulled on that experience and said, well, you know, I have to do this. It's going to have to happen. I didn't have any idea that, you know, what was going to happen with the Flyers. But, you know, you just try a little thing here and a little thing there, and failure is important to move ahead in anything that you do and in any profession. Fear of failure is what will kill you.
Yeah, no doubt.
So you fail and you know, try it again. And it worked pretty well, you know, through high school and then at St. Joe's. And I was able to do things. And, you know, with the Flyers, it's I remember the first time I did a center ice thing, I was like shaking.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But I prepared. I had everything written down, you know, ready to go. And now I feel good about it, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell.
Yeah. Right.
You're unbelievable at it.
My favorite thing at center ice, I think I was talking about it the other night, and I saw Hexie, and he was in with Pittsburgh, and we were having a chat. And when he was put into the Hall of Fame, he had given me a stick. I arranged to bring the stick in, put it on top of one of the goals, and then bring that goal up near the end of the ceremony. And then I said, one last time, you know, let's hear what you do, ring the posts.
Yeah.
And you know what he used to do every game. Yeah, yeah. Was his sticks all had the paint on the shafts.
That's right.
And he looked at me and he said, yeah, I'd love to. And he got in there, poppity, 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 bing, bing, bing. You know, and we put it up there. And I still have the stick to this day. And it's a great remembrance.
Oh, it's awesome.
And he said, that was terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't expect to do that. I said, well, hey, you're the man. You're the man.
Yeah, so, for sure.
That was a good one.
That was one of my favorite things when I was a kid, you know, about him when I first saw him. I was scared to death of him.
I've said that story with many others.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Like, I'd watched everything, so I'd come visit my dad, who was the trainer at the time, and I would come up a few times a year, and I just remember saying to my dad, it was a game day, he's like, I really want to meet Hexy, you know, and he goes, it's a game day. Let's wait till after, and you can, you know, and of course he was awesome after the game, Hexy, but man, then when I came, and my first year with the Flyers was the shortened season of 94-95, and we made a trade, Soderstrom, to New York Islanders for Hexy, and he came in, and when I saw his pregame and the way he was, I'm like, it's a good thing my dad kept me awake.
Yeah,
I would
right,
have been
yeah.
petrified. I'd never seen a more intense individual in my life
yeah.
before and during a hockey game. He burned more calories in the locker room.
Oh, my God. Anxiety.
Everything, man. I'm like, how can you even focus on what you're doing, man?
Yeah, I guess everybody has their routines to do.
Right.
And as I do, too, because I have to get ready. But it's not near as serious as a player. I remember once talking about goalies. We were at the All-Star game in Chicago, my wife Ellen and I, and with Cadillacs. And the story goes like this. We're in the hotel, and we're going to take the NHL bus to the game. And in the Peter Jennings, you may know that name. He was a newsman.
Sure.
Great newsman. He's in the lobby there. He's a Canadian. I mean, national news with NBC, I guess. And I went up and introduced myself to him. He's looking at a map. I said, you going to the game? He says, oh, yeah, we're going to the game. I said, what are you planning on taking the subway? You're looking at the subway? He says, yeah, we'll take the subway. I said, no. Come with us. We got a bus. He says, okay. So I said, meet me here at such a time. So all these executives, Snyder's in the first seat, and all these guys are there. And I come on the bus, and I've got Peter Jennings with me in my back pocket.
Wow.
And he comes on, and Ed looks up, and it's Peter Jennings. He said, yeah, Lou invited me on the bus here. It's okay, right? He says, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure.
We went to the game, but to go a little farther with it, we stopped the bus. Joe says, stop here. We'll go in the side door. It's terrible up there. Snowstorm, just brutal. And my wife had a fur coat, as did a lot of the people, the women. And Joe arranged to have them left in the boiler room with this guy he knew, this little French guy. Joe Cadillac. You know what it was like.
Who doesn't know Joe Cadillac?
Yeah, right.
So we left our coats there. My wife's saying, is the coat safe here? I said, oh, yeah, no problem. Anyway, so we leave, and we're at the side door. Now, in All-Star games, you know, the guys sit around. So they're all in the hallway. They're dressed. They're sitting around. And we're walking over guys to get to where we need to be. And at the very end is Eddie Balfour. Oh. And he's sitting in a chair. Now, he knows he's going to get bombed. And he's sitting there, and he's going like, he's not paying attention to anybody,
right?
You know, and I just think that the routines that you mentioned,
right?
That's really one that I'll never forget.
Wow,
great game.
Riles' routine was he was there really early.
Yeah,
I could even get a little nap in the afternoon, and then about 8 cups of black coffee.
At least
8 cups of black coffee.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. 10 Sudafed.
Now you have a Red Bull, right?
Oh, yeah. Mixing any stimulant you could find there. Pacing up and down the hallway. I think the only guy more intense than me, especially when Lavi came in, was Lavi. Pierre Laviolette. Yeah. I mean, he was pacing up and down.
He matched you on the coffee.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
and everything else.
Yeah.
A little different. Great stuff, you know. Yeah. Things that come to you in stories. And,
yeah.
Just great.
Yeah, I know for sure. Well, talk about, you know, your one of the classiest guys that you had to deal with in the penalty box and maybe one of the least classiest guys. I know you've had a ton of dialogue with not just players but refs as well.
Yeah, well, okay. The least would be a young kid that played with Jersey Devils preseason, I think, because he wasn't very good. They were looking at him. I mean, he was
high
he
number.
Was huge.
Start, just starting shit again here.
Blonde hair. And his name, C-A-L-E something, the Swedish type thing. So I figure he's Cali, right? So he, I called a penalty, he gets in the box. I said, something like, Cali Sandstrom or something of that nature. And he says, hey, asshole, it's Kale. I said, oh. So I said, you know, you really need to have more respect for us. You shouldn't be doing this, you know. This is preseason and so forth. And he yells at the timer. He says, Joe says, yeah, you should. And he says, ah, shut up, Baldy. Now I'm pissed.
he's shaking him.
Then Eric Lindros comes in and bangs on the glass right in front of me, the plexi, and it goes powder white and just falls into these little itty-bitty pieces like they do. And we all get out of the penalty box, including the guy who has the penalty, and they're coming in to clean it up and hold the game up. And Don Koharski's the ref, and he's standing and right outside the crease and with this kid. So I come out, and I said, by the way, I said, you know, you should have more respect, you know, for us here in the box. We've been here a lot of years, and, you know, there's careers here. And he said, I never said anything. I said, you are one liar. You're a lying son of a bitch, you know. And Koharski says to me, he says, Louie. So I said, get the hell out of here. I'm having a difficult time enough with this today.
Especially
I don't need you to get in the way.
Yeah, right?
But, yeah.
Especially preseason, right? Because everybody's fighting.
Oh, nothing. Yeah, everybody's trying to establish something for themselves.
Right.
So, yeah, there was a parade in the box. Two or three guys many times each period. So
this guy came to visit you quite a bit.
Yes.
Over the few years.
Yes. A couple little visits.
Riles did some business there. He was always very good in the box. He didn't ask for coffee. But he was a visitor many times, and one of the good guys, which is obvious, you know. And a guy that you know had a long time as a player, probably coming up through the ranks. You Canadian?
I am, yeah.
Okay, so when did you start playing?
I was 4 years old.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So 4 years, and you make it to the NHL, which is always a goal, you know, to play in the NHL. And, you know, the teams then, you know, it was different hockey.
Oh, sure.
Different hockey than what we're seeing here. The bullies, you know, we talk about the bullies. It was post-bullies, of course, because you're a young guy. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there was a heritage there for the Flyers that people expected us to take care of our own. And now you wonder about that sometimes. Yeah. You know, guys get hit. But you need somebody that would do that, and you did that. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Yeah, he did. You said, guys used to, I've said this before, guys used to make fun of me because when he'd get in tilts, he was undersized for the guys he was fighting, heavyweight. Caliber guys and held his own for 3 years there. But yep. I used to be bobbing and weaving as he's fighting. And Harry Bricker used to be like, you all right? You okay? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just bobbing for him, you know? Like, he'd say, he knows what he's doing. Don't worry about it.
Try and avoid the punches for him.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Thanks, Nas.
You didn't have to. He did it wrong.
I didn't want to catch one of them.
Did you see me trying to avoid any punches? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I was putting my chin out there.
That would be a really bad idea to catch one of those.
Especially me. But back to what you were saying. So this Cali guy, that's what we're calling him, even though he said Cali.
Oh, I said, call him Cali for the rest of that game because I think his career ended that day.
Yeah, right.
But the classiest guy.
Oh, yeah. The classiest guy would be Steve Yzerman.
Not surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. Two sides to that. Two instances. I worked with that glass back in those days.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't know any better. You know, we get hit once in a while with sticks and pucks and people would come in. hip checks. Remember those, don't you? Hip checks. And so Steve got a penalty once after he had talked to me several times and got to know him a bit and about assists for guys and changing this or making this different. And I said, gee, if you chip a stick today, you know, he used one of those Louisville scorer stick, rounded on the edges and just a beautiful stick. And I said, if you chip one, save it for me. He said, sure, no problem. Anyway, he's got the hat trick now. and they're kicking our ass.
Thanks to you. Getting pumped up.
And sure enough, I call him his first star. He skates all the way across the ice, hands me the stick, and says, see me after, I'll sign it.
That's awesome.
I said, oh, boy, what a great thing to do. Classy guy. And after that, at an all-star game, my family was with me for the festivities in a large room. You know, the players were all there, and they weren't being chased around by young kids for autographs and things like that. They could just be themselves, and Steve just sat with us for 15 minutes and just got to know everybody, my wife and kids. And, you know, it was just he's like that now, too. He's
right.
just got it. He's got it.
Yeah. He does.
And let me add to the story. I took the stick in when he was with Tampa. I knew he'd be traveling because he had done it in pen. And I said, we got to get this in Sharpies.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Oh, yeah.
So I brought it into the room where they change opposite where they were to put their equipment on and where they're taking the suits off and stuff. And Steve's in there on a computer with a couple other guys. And as soon as I walk in with the stick, he says, hey, Lou, how are you? I said, good, Steve. I said, I brought that stick. Now the guys are saying, what the hell is that stick?
Oh, yeah, right. You know? Yeah. Because, how many years later that
yeah.
was?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, I do think that there was used composite sticks then.
Yeah.
So the guys didn't even, maybe they used wooden sticks growing up and they were almost square, you know,
yeah.
Or, rectangular. And the edges, they would sand the edges down a little bit, a lot of guys. But these came for him, you know, ready to go. So everybody took a chance holding it and said, how the hell did you ever play with this stick? He said, I don't know.
He did pretty good.
That's what I like.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, he sure did. He did pretty good.
Not bad.
So, yeah, he was the classiest guy. And, you know, a lot of guys are great.
Yeah.
You know, I love the fighters. They're great guys. You know, Zach Rinaldo is one of the classiest guys.
Yeah. I love Reno.
He'll go in there, and as you've mentioned to me, a lot of times he's hitting guys with good checks. And in these days and times, they're – call them penalties.
Yeah.
Just because he's tougher.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and he'd come in the box and he'd be sitting there, hey guys, how you doing? Good, you know, what's going on? He said, anybody got any chocolate?
Yeah.
He always wanted M&Ms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the guys brought them in a cup from the, you know, brought them up from the press area and they'd have them and they'd pass him a cup over and he'd eat M&Ms out of the coffee cup.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Energy, I guess.
Get
energy,
a little sugar. Right?
Yeah, a little sugar.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. You got to recover from the fight.
Yeah.
I forget where it was that I ran into him, but still a guy that's a really sharp guy. Just a great guy.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah, he just oozes orange and black. Eh? He just fit right into the Flyers culture
right
big
in.
Time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
He sure did.
Yeah.
Might have been an alumni game. I'm not sure. But, yeah, he was good as usual.
Yeah.
Lou, I think we've probably told this before, but real quickly on Zach. So when he came to his first dev camp, development camp, Riley was still playing, and we were standing out by the glass, and this is when they used to let him scrimmage 5-on-5. And he's basically the reason why they stopped doing that.
Right.
He
knew one way to play.
Yeah,
he did.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, he was there to make a statement.
Oh, yeah.
He even said that to us when we had him on the show. He hit three guys and took them out of the game. And, I mean, hit them. Like, clean.
Yeah.
But there were three guys laying on the ice his first four or five shifts, and the last guy he hit, one of the other kids on the team, is David Laliberte.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Lally. In the finals for us, Lally. Great guy. Not a fighter, but he jumped in because Zach absolutely decapitated someone. And when Zach took two punches, and poor Lally's laying on the ice. Now he's laid four guys out in about five shifts, but he hurt his wrist a little bit, so they take him off. So Riley and I go back, and we're sitting in my office at the skate zone, and he peeks his head around the corner and he goes, hey, Cote, that was for you, man. Like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, super cool. Because it was right in front of us, the skate zone
it
there.
Right, I mean, it was right where we were standing. And he looked up to Riley, and it was just kind of cool that he said, hey, Cote, it was for you, man.
Oh, man.
Great guy.
Great guy.
We still have a good relationship with him. I coached him actually with the Phantoms, and, you know, still keep in touch with him. But he's, you know, heart and soul, just, you know,
true flyer. All,
yeah, true, true flyer for sure. 100%. No doubt.
Yep.
Speaking about, like, you know, true flyer and the culture of Flyers, to talk about how the culture's evolved over time, especially since the passing of Ed Snyder and the culture of the Flyers now.
Okay, well, let's start at the beginning because I saw all the years.
Right.
I'm an original Flyer, so I saw the team struggle early. They drafted guys that were made available. We had a couple of good goalies, but there were other guys that were a little long in the tooth. And we managed to finish first with a losing record of like one or two games. So we're in the playoffs. And, you know, that got young guys and then drafted Bob. And that helped, certainly. And began to move. And then, you know, Ed Snyder made sure that we had guys that would defend our good players.
Right.
And then the bullies came and, you know, Moose and Selesky and Bobby Kelly and Dave Schultz and people like that. And that was another era, you know, and two Stanley Cups, right. Almost a third.
Yeah.
A couple right. guys got hurt. And, you know, there was an offside call.
Yeah.
By one of our favorite guys.
Yeah.
Good guy, Leon Stickle.
Right.
But he just saw something different and he admits it than it really was.
That was way off.
Yeah, it was not just, it was not close.
It
was way
off. It was not close.
You know, then we had the era when Howie and those guys played, and he's being honored by the sports writers this Monday, I think, at the dinner. And next time around, you know, I mean, they were good. Timmy Kerr.
Yeah.
Poulin. Went all the way, except for the last game. In Edmonton, I guess, when Timmy Kerr and Pooley didn't play
right.
and were hurt. And I don't know what the score was in that, but a loss is a loss. Then you go fast forward to, you know, some successes and some teams that were pretty good. Team in Chicago against Chicago that almost did it. And we still have a goalie looking for that shot. It's just, I mean, it happens.
Right,
it happens.
You know, it's a shame. And the referees didn't even know it went in, but I knew it went in.
Yeah.
When, you know, their player's going up the ice throwing his gloves and throwing his sticks.
Thanks
a
lot, Kaner.
Yep. Kaner.
That's right, Kane. And, you know, now we go to this team and you start out strong. But I guess it was maybe 6 years. We just had 6 years ago, let me say that Ed passed. And things have changed. You know, you got different people running the team. Their passion for the game would never match Ed, simply because it was his baby.
Right.
It was his baby, and it was tough. And I know that when Briz came in, Brizgalov, Homer was told, go get the best goalie out there.
Right.
Bring him in. And he was the best at that time, except he was crazy. I mean, he was a little bit nuts.
Yeah, right.
Continues to be a little nuts. And, you know, you buy him out, and we're still paying him, I think.
Yeah.
God bless his soul. But, you know, and so a little different thing. Instead of Ed being at the head, you know, it goes to Dave Scott, who's doing the best he can, and the GM. And, you know, you run into injuries, and you get labeled one way or another, and you try and put a team together. One of the big things in there that came in that I guess might be a detriment to really doing things the way Ed did was salary cap.
Right.
When the salary cap showed up, you couldn't just go out and buy people.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like baseball does now.
Yeah.
And you couldn't get better overnight without any worry about the economics of the game, which you have to now. So that would be, I guess, the biggest change in the game. Not to mention that referees are taught to call, you know, anytime there's a stick up high hooking. You know, some of this stuff's ridiculous. Yeah. It's not what it is.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, granted, when you hooked the guy back in those days,
you were skiing. Yeah, you were skiing on him. Yeah.
That's
you know,
right.
Back in the day.
That's right. And so it's a lot different now. And the players adjust to it, and they play differently. There's no the amount of roughness. I mean, I think Merle Reese and Mike Quick do a thing where they call something the Matt Slap Plap of the game. It's when a big hit is made.
Yeah.
So whenever we see a hit, which we don't see a lot of them these days, I'm on the headset and I'm saying, oh, that's the Matt Slap Plap of the game.
Yeah, right.
And we get a big laugh out of it.
Yeah.
Some games there'll be more if somebody gets excited. But the roughness is different.
Right,
and there's not a whole lot of body work. Now, starting now, there will be.
Yes,
there'll be a lot more.
I was going to say it's
and it changes.
Yeah.
So some of those big defensemen that maybe don't hit as much will begin to, especially guys like from Tampa.
Yes.
Right. They'll start taking guys out. And Florida's got some pretty good people too. So we'll see what happens there. Who does Toronto play in the first round? Do you know?
Baller.
We'll figure it out. But in any event, I think that, Toronto's going to get a lot of goals. I mean, about this guy. He's got 60 now, right?
Austin Matthews.
Austin Matthews. And Marner feeds him the puck, and he just is in the right place, and he has a lot of confidence. And
he could shoot.
They're going to play Tampa. Yeah.
Tampa, that's who it is.
Tampa and Toronto?
Yeah.
I think that's the one I want to watch.
Oof. Oh, yeah. Good.
And I hope that Florida is on a different night.
It's a good point.
Because if you got to decide between two games, you know, I'm going to root for Florida all the way, but I think Toronto and Tampa will also be very good.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
West.
I'm always pulling for the Blues because of Chief, you know. One of my best buddies. But I was talking to him a couple of days ago, and it was actually funny. Jimmy Montgomery. Assistant coach there, FaceTimes me, and he goes, he's got all the coaching staff and the trainers in the coach's room in St. Louis. And he goes, start giving me some Chief impressions. So he's got the phone on me, and they're all sitting there, and I'm doing, you know, some of Chief's things, and they're just dying. But I told him, I'm like, being on the West, I mean, it's tough over there. And you talk about the rough stuff the other night with the Calgary game.
Oh, yeah.
That got Nashville. That was old school, not like bullies, but a hard fought. You know, hitting, fighting, everything. And that's what – you don't ever see anyone sitting down, do you, Lou, when there's a tilt, you know, in games like that? There's not usually many people sitting down.
Everyone's quiet, sitting down.
Yeah.
Nope. That's for sure. Many, many people will wait to watch hockey, ice hockey, till now.
Exactly.
I'm not like that because I have a stake in it, obviously.
Right.
And, you want to watch it. And, there are times when it's tough to watch current team.
Yeah.
That'll change. That'll change. And the young guys, it's a young man's game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got young guys, and they get along for the most part, I believe. There's never everybody getting along with everybody. You guys know. I mean, there's always it's difficult when you get 20 guys or 23 guys or 25 to agree and get tight on everything for a full year. It probably happened with the Bullies, except for Clarkie, when he used to take guys into the woodshed and tell, come on, get this freaking going. He was that kind of a captain, a great captain.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to it. You know, it's going to be something.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
For sure. I was just going to say, kind of going back to the culture of the Flyers, do you feel that the essence of the Flyers has been lost? I mean, I understand that it's no longer the Broad Street Bullies, and the NHL itself has evolved, hockey itself has evolved, but the essence of the Flyers now, do you feel like there's an ingredient missing that exudes what Flyer fans are used to?
Perhaps there is. What the key to it would be, to me, is find a real talented player who's tough, really tough, and is not afraid to, take a penalty now and then. When Lindros was here, I think that they actually tried to keep him out of the penalty box.
Yeah.
You know, he fought a couple guys early on and just cleaned up.
Yeah.
And then when they didn't want him to fight, the guys took advantage of him, you know, and that one Russian defenseman lowered the boom on him from the Islanders, and that started it all. I think a big, tough player would be great to have. But, I mean, because of the way hockey is now, I'm not sure they're being tough as they go through junior. You guys would know more than I. You have better hockey minds than me. But what I'm trying to say is, where are the big kids who are good and tough and not afraid to take a penalty and defend the other people? So maybe my answer is, a little bit.
Yeah.
It's changed a little bit.
For sure.
And going forward, I don't know. I've seen many fans who want the old stuff back. The NHL doesn't want the old stuff back.
No, they don't. But I look at like St. Louis, for example. You mean Chief, right? I mean, he goes into St. Louis and he turns that team around. And it was not because he told these guys to go fight. it was just the way they played the game. It was like that energy of being relentless and getting on pucks and skating and just being hard team to play against.
They just
play hard, right? And it's not about fighting. And I feel like Flyers have lost that essence of just being a hard team to play against. So when you know when you come into the building, you're in for a fight. And it's not about the fight itself, but it's like the dogfight of the game.
There was a time when Montreal would come in here and they'd have guys sick.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, guys that couldn't play. I'm terrible today. I feel lousy today. They didn't want to play here.
Flyers flu.
Yeah, they didn't want to play. Yeah.
Flyers flu. That's exactly right.
That's right.
And, it's St. Louis is a tough team to play against. And a lot of that goes back to Chief because the leader he is with those guys.
Yeah.
You know, and how he encourages them. Certain things they do, they're encouraged to do things. So that's been tough to do here, you know. Coaching change was made here, and do the best they can. But, you know, I mean, come on. It's just, you know, they bring in a guy that's got the tremendous pedigree, you know, and not everybody likes the guy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, some coaches like to play younger players. Some coaches do not like to play younger players.
Yeah.
And remember Patrick Kane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was much better once he left and got a chance to get more ice time.
Oh, Patrick Sharp you're talking about.
Sharp, rather.
Yeah,
Sharp,
right, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Patrick Sharp,
I'm sorry. Yeah, because Hitch was one of those guys that didn't love young guys.
Justin Williams. He didn't want to play Willie.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Good grief.
Yeah.
Play the right way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Those guys go off and have success elsewhere, you know, and you give up on them too early. It's a shame that happens for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's no easy answer to that question.
No, there's not. No.
Teams go through metamorphosis.
Yep.
Nobody wants to admit that they're going to blow up a team and start over.
Right.
So it's, you know, yeah, we got the, you know, we got the people here that we think we can do it with once everybody's back and so forth. And you add a couple of people. Well, sometimes you add a couple of people and the injuries come back. And next thing you know, you're winning that 10 in a row.
Yeah.
Or you're unbeaten in 10.
Right. Mm-hmm.
However that happens with these days. But, you know, getting your points and not going through a long streak where the guys get down.
Yeah.
And you can't seem to get anything right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, snowballs quickly.
And the goalie's fighting the puck because inevitably some nights they will fight the puck.
Yes.
You could tell from the beginning how deep they are in the net or whether they're aggressive.
Yeah.
What's the night going to be like?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Lou, you know, you just made me think of something. You're talking going back to the when the Flyers were playing in the finals, and I think it was a game to force game 7 when J.J. Daniels scored. What I was going to ask you about that moment, I've watched that video, and I just remember my dad saying, you know, my dad had never really sell it. Like, I was more hyper, like we were talking about earlier, like, you guys were like had a bit of a fear of speaking. Everybody's always telling me shut the fuck up because I talk so damn much. But I'm more hype, and you know, me and Lavi used to jump into each other. We'd score a goal, and it could be a regular season goal, and we were just hitting each other. But there's a picture of my dad, and he's got both hands up in the air. It was when JJ scored, but he said he thought the roof was coming off that building.
And I've been asked that question when in comparison of buildings,
right.
In other words, what's the loudest at the spectrum, loudest in the Wells Fargo Center? And I always said that the loudest in the spectrum wasn't really a cheer. It was a roar that built. May 19th of 1974, first Stanley Cup. And the roar began with about 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
Then Orr got that penalty. I mean, it was maybe a little bit longer than two. Bobby got that penalty. And it's, you know, gets down to the last minute, and I'm saying last minute of playing the third period, and you can't even hear yourself. Nobody heard what I said.
Wow.
My headset's crackling. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And you have goose pimples all over you. You know, it's terrible.
Couldn't even
Not
imagine.
Terrible. It's great.
Yeah.
Which would happen again. And then I equate that to the first game in the Wells Fargo Center when U.S. played.
Yes. I was there. I was on the bench for that game.
Yeah. And I think Johnny had a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge roar there. And then Daniel, his was another one where the roof was going to come off the building because it's like, come on, come on, we need this, we need this. Boom, you're there.
Yeah.
You know, and you survived, and you had the opportunity to move ahead. And back then, pretty much the same people came over and over and over and over. And you'd see the same people sitting behind you in the early years of the Spectrum. I saw families grow up, kids grow up. They bring me birthday cakes and stuff like that because the gas was low. So a lot of good stuff happened. And nowadays, you know, it's difficult for somebody to sustain a full season's worth of tickets. It's just the way the economics is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's difficult. You know, players make a lot more money. It's harder to do different things. And you know, it's just the times. It's the time. So people might sell off half their season ticket. Yeah. Corporate might own places that they give tickets out. There's a lot different changing there. But I think a lot of it will change when this team gets into the playoffs. The Roars will be back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it will be much better. And, you know, every time you move up through another series, it gets better and better and better.
Yeah, that's the truth.
You know, so that when we played Chicago, I know that and we lost that one here. That was – the Roar was there for that too.
Yeah.
But not when you get to Game 7 and next thing you know, Clarkie gets hooked down.
Yeah.
And Orr's in the box. I mean, you go pick a guy to put in the box.
Yeah,
make it him.
Exactly.
Couldn't have been any better. Send him.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So here's the answer to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You've seen so much. I mean, it's like I said, we need days to pick your brain and hear all the stories. But another one we can't not talk about is the Russian game with the Broad Street Bullies and that whole day.
True. It was good that that's a good one. Russians came in and they had beat some of our teams and the whole NHL was rooting for the Flyers, although they really didn't before that. Clarence Campbell wanted the Flyers to win. And that guy, when he handed us the Stanley Cup, was like, he's like, he was
living a nightmare.
It was just terrible. It's like he farted and it came up to his face. And, you know, so here we were. I took the day off during their skate. And I wanted to be around to see what it was all about. And Joe Kalak had told me, he said, we're going to take the Russians downtown to shop, so you should be along. I said, okay. So I'm there and I'm standing in the hallway and Boris Mikhailov, who's their captain, I didn't know who he was at the time, but he came out and he looked at me and walked out of the locker room in his hockey underwear and stuff and gave me a pin. I said, thank you. And he like stood there as if I get one in return, right? Well, I didn't have anything to give him, so I showed him. I didn't have anything in my pocket. I pulled out my change, and in my change was a Kennedy half dollar. And he said, oh. So he took that. 5 minutes later, there's 10 guys sticking their heads out of the room giving me pins because they all want a half dollar. Well, I don't have any more half dollars. How many of them do you carry at one time? It's like a mistake if you have one.
Yeah, right.
So I said, I'll be back. I went to the bank and got a couple rolls of half dollars and I came back and traded pins for half dollars. And I have unbelievable amount of Russian pins. And when they went on the ice for practice, the quote-unquote doctors who really were KGB men with them, I guess due to the fact that there was, the Cold War, Kennedy, Khrushchev, and all these kinds of things, went through their belongings and took all the half dollars and confiscated them from the players. Wow. I don't have any more. You know, guys asked me, the interpreters, do you have any more of them? And I gave them all out. But I always thought that was bad. Of course, then you move to the next day, which is the game.
Right.
And we're defending the honor of the NHL. And things are going along. And again, you know, it was back in the work with that glass era. So was right up and close on all this. And, you know, Van Imp has his elbow run into by Valeri Karmiloff, who's one of their better players.
Rizelbo. What a dirty play to run into Rizelbo.
Yeah, why would he do that? He went at the Herdade. Well, he went down, and he stayed down, and there was no penalty, so now they're pissed. They're really pissed. And they're all around their bench. Coach calls them over, and so the referee comes over, and he's talking to a fellow that's sitting with me with the name of Aggie Kuklowitz. Now, there's a name.
Imagine
that on an old autograph.
Yeah, right.
In the old days, not these days. It'd be an A.
Yeah, exactly.
And so he says, what do we do, Aggie? He says, I guess I should go talk to them. And Lloyd Gilmore is a ref there, single ref those days. And he says, yeah, give him a penalty for delay of the game. So I said,
oh. Here we go.
So, so they get a penalty instead of us getting a penalty. Now they're really upset.
Oh, yeah.
And they leave. And they're looking at one another, and our guy's over there. And Aggie says, I better go talk to somebody. And the ref says, that's a good idea. So we go over. I went over with him just to get a feel on what was going to happen. I mean, they may not come back, you know?
Right.
I got to cancel a game. Wouldn't be a good idea. And the fans were nuts. You know, they were nuts. They hated them. And so down the hall, as we're coming up the ramp, comes Ed Snyder. And he's pumping along.
Oh, you know what he's pissed. Man. That walk. I was going to say, red. You know, he's,
veins are popping out of his neck, and he's just crimson. And he goes by everybody and bangs it right through their thing into their room. I said, holy jeez. So Aggie goes in, and they're talking back and forth. After maybe 5 minutes, Ed comes out, and he says, they'll be back. They'll be back in 5 minutes. Go tell the people. So I go over across the ice, and I said, we'll resume the game, you know, in 10 minutes or whatever. The Soviet team is coming back, and they're sharpening their skates. Or I don't know what I told them they're doing. And sure enough, here they come. Now, they put those guys out again. The next thing you know, we have a couple of goals.
Right.
And including one by Joe Watson.
Joe Watson.
Yeah. Who, Freddie said, set their program back, you know, a decade. And in any event, you know, we went on to win. They got their money, which was what Ed threatened them with.
Right.
No money, because Alan Eagleson, who ran the Players Association, agreed to have them paid after our game. So we had something on them.
Yeah.
And I guess it was substantial.
It's a good idea.
Talking about
six, eight games, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot of games, a lot of money. And I guess they realized they were going to have to use the Soviet economy, which was a mess, and live for another decade with the smelly pads and little pads. Oh, it was terrible. You know
stinky,
that.
Stinky room.
Just terrible. Yeah. And they would get a guy in the penalty box. You know, whoa.
Ooh,
that's terrible. Bad, eh?
And so they agreed, and they left with their tails between their legs, and it was a great event for us and just one of the best days ever.
Yeah.
You know, it's I would say one of the best days ever. To be an announcer and to be as close to all that as I am.
Yeah,
right? You know?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Exactly. It's funny. I have a Russian story about them playing the Maine Mariners. My dad was in Maine as the trainer, and I think I was about 5 or 6. And long story short, Jim Turk Evers, who's the equipment manager, he was there working with my dad. Now, he's a teenager, and I'm like 5, maybe 4, 5, 6. And we're right before the game, like, you know, they hadn't gone out to warm up shed. And Turk says to me, hey, Derek, you see those, what they were spotlights. But I don't know what they are. He goes, those are machine guns. And I'm like, jeez. What? Why? And, I'm 5, right?
Yeah.
So he goes, well, the Russian guys are crazy. Like, if their goalie loses, they'll shoot them. They're going to shoot them right on the ice. And I'm like, what? You know, I'm like a little kid, and I go running in the locker room. I'm like, I'm like getting upset. I'm like, you're going to shoot the goalies? And my dad's like, they're not actually Turk. What the fuck is wrong with you, man? He's telling me these lights are machine guns. They're going to fire the goalies.
I can see, I can hear Sudsy right now. Turk, what the fuck is wrong with you? What are you doing, man? Yeah, just but looking at him.
That's not quite as good as your day with the game.
I'm reminded of a story the first year of the Flyers. And it involves a sports writer. And I was on the charter to Montreal. And we are ahead in the game 4-2 at the Forum. First time we're there. And we're an expansion team. Rochefort has a hat trick. And he played with the Canadiens. Remember, they drafted him from Montreal. So maybe you weren't even a five-year-old then. And so I'm sitting in the press box next to a guy named John Brogan, who wrote for the Bulletin, a defunct paper now. And he said, listen, maybe 5 minutes left in the game, he says, go down there and get some quotes from Keith, you know, for me, will you? I said, sure. I don't know anything. I don't know shit from Shinola. I run down as fast as I can. And in Montreal, you could actually walk right out of a tunnel and walk right up to the bench. And I walked out of the tunnel, walked right up to the bench. There was about 2 minutes left. And they're changing lines. The guys are jumping on and jumping off. And I said, Keith, John Brogan sent me down to get a couple quotes from you about what how this game's going. He says, what? he said, Lou, he said, tell him that I'm pleased if it works this way. And so he said a few things. Yeah. And he says, now get the hell out of here. Now, up in the press box, they're watching the game. And the goalie's pulled from Montreal. And we're jumping guys over. And they all of a sudden, John says, and then I see you come out and walk right up to Keith Allen with like 2 minutes left in the game. I said, oh, well, tell me, be more succinct with what you want me to do.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But afterwards, Keith said, if we'd have lost that game, you'd have walked home from Montreal. I don't know.
You're having a tough start, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't know.
Oh, man.
Just do what you're told.
That's right. And, yeah. That's just like the machine guns. That made me think of it. Machine guns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
On the goalies.
That's hilarious.
You just believe stuff, you know?
Yeah, right.
Do what you think you should do.
Yeah. Talk about your relationship with the Spectrum. Obviously, you're there with roughly 25 years, and then eventually they make the decision to, well, probably longer than that. You mean the center was already in existence by the time they took it down. But talk about your feelings towards when all that took place.
Well, the building was great building to watch hockey.
Yeah.
It was easy to get around from the press box right down to players. You know, now it's more difficult, obviously. But I always tell people that the Spectrum could fit inside the Wells Fargo Center width-wise, you know, the width. And great building. Just a wonderful, wonderful hockey building. A lot of good concerts, you know. Yeah. I mean, I did a couple of basketball games there for the Sixers when guys were sick.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, I mean, I did a lot of stuff there. In fact, I did the first lacrosse game there. Fitz Dixon, who was one of the owners, asked me to do his game. When they came in, they flew a bunch of Canadian guys into play. And it was it happened to be after the Stanley Cup win. So, I mean, was like three sheets to the wind when it did the game. But it worked out.
For sure.
And when it came time to move the new building, big difference. But when it came time to say goodbye to that building, I remember Ed Snyder having the absolute last party in there, and he had it draped like you were coming into a Hollywood premiere.
Right.
You know, somebody took your car and you walked down and you come in the back and you go out and, you know, shrimp were the size of bananas. Yeah. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Right. Yeah.
And when the guys found out that I wanted to have Crown Royal, they didn't have any. They went over and got it.
Oh, wow.
At the other building and brought it back for me. But that kind of stuff. I mean, it was, you know, Ed was something else. And then when it came time to say goodbye, I remember they asked me to be the head man up on a dais with a bunch of people, including Dr. J and Bernie and Clarkie and members of the alumni and different people that had been dealing with the building through all those years. And there was a big crane there. They were going to punch a hole in the building or knock the building down when we finished. You know, it was like the last thing we were going to do. So guys spoke and Ed was there. And when Ed was finished, you know, I said, now you'll hear from our chairman, Ed Snyder. Da-da-da. He says a few things about how much he loved the building. He gives me the mic back and he says, thanks, Lou. I said, thank you, Ed. He gets in. The guy pulls up with his truck, his car, SUV, phew, gone. Didn't want to be around to see what happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, after it all got done, we all turned around and we're looking at the building. They fire up this huge crane with a big like a ball that they use for wrecking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they take it, and they're getting the momentum out. They're moving it back farther. When they finally bring it in, it hits the building, bounces off the building. I mean, that building was...
Yeah, right.
So after like three or four of them, they finally punched a hole in the building, and Lou Scheinfeld, who was there, said, "Let's cut it. We can't do any more of this." So it was a goodbye thing. Good night, goodbye. Right. And the people that were there left. They turned the crane off. But taking it down was really tough.
Yeah.
Taking it down was really tough. And I remember one of the last days that I saw it, it was like the bones, all the bones, and most of the skin was off.
Yeah.
And I went down and I looked at it and I drove around the block and looked at it. And, you know, that was it. After that, say goodbye. But what a building. What a great hockey building.
I loved it.
Yeah. I loved it too, man. It was the transition to the center. It was almost tough for me playing, you know, with the Phantoms at the Spectrum.
Oh, sure.
It was just like there's something so, I don't know, just like just so ground level and just intimate about it. And
it was energy. Hockey.
Yeah,
it was hockey. It was a hockey building.
Right. It was.
You know?
It really was.
Weren't the Grace at the best amenities, I guess, but we didn't know any different.
Well, that's it, right?
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
It was easy to do things there and good ice and, you know, certainly one of the great buildings. I mean, I was there when the roof blew off.
Yeah, right.
Then
yeah.
I made those trips to New York and some games up in, I guess it would be Quebec. We played some games there. And it was a terrible time. But it finally got together. So, which was good.
Lou, there's something else that we have in common besides working for the Flyers, and we're both Olympians.
Oh, yeah.
In some sort of way. You know, 2002, I think, Salt Lake.
Yep.
You were asked to be the main man, which you are. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I was working at home, and the phone rang, and picked it up, and was this is the Salt Lake organizing committee. So I said, okay. I said, we want to ask if you would do the Olympic hockey broadcast. I said, who is this? Who is this? Who's got me?
Yeah,
somebody's
right.
getting me. When they finally convinced me, I said, well, yeah, I'd be honored. You know, what are the details? And, I mean, you know, it's not something you can go and spend a weekend. You know, it's a commitment.
Yes.
So I made that commitment, and it was during the right after 9/11. So it was tight as could be.
Oh, right.
And I remember flying out, on the airplane, and it's full of a lot of people that are going there. I'm sitting next to a woman, and the flight attendant hands her a piece of paper with a bunch of seat locations on it. And I said, oh, what's that? She says, oh, well, that's just the seat locations of other folks that are on here carrying weapons. Well, weapons.
Said, you want to speak into my good ear? What'd you just say?
I said, weapons. She says, yes, I'm a federal agent. Oh. And there are a lot of us on this airplane. We're going out to see what it's like. It was just the first time we're out there, then he sent us back. So did that, and that was, I remember, I'll never forget that one. And, you know, going back out and doing the games and sitting, eating food with soldiers, with, you know, carrying M16s.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
And it was a scary time. But it worked out okay. A lot of mag and bag, like the airport, going through, going and getting in, and knowing what we could wear and shoes and not having a lot of metal things on us. And, you know, it was quite a time. I remember doing a game. Oh, and it was the first game we did. I was men's English, and we had a French guy there because English and French. Okay. Then we had a women's guy, and the guy said, "Listen, our first game is a women's game, but we want you to do it because you're the senior guy." Okay, it's China and Bulgaria or something. So, reading the Chinese names, and. The French guy, he's on headset, and he's funny as hell. And I'm doing the names, and he says, "Hey, Louie, they're all looking at you." That's a bad thing when they look at you.
Yeah, right.
One by one, you do. I'm saying the names, and they're going.
Kaylee?
Kaylee? Yeah.
They're all backwards because the Chinese names, they gave me no paper. It was all on computer.
No way.
They're backwards. It's like, the name in China is, it would be like Cote, Riley.
Right.
So I'd call you Cote Riley.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know any better. But they fixed that all up. So that was one of the things. Second one was, Lindros picking up a penalty and getting in the box. And it just shows you about concentration. It was not in the first period. I had done some announcements. And he gets in the box, and, he's there and puts a stick down and turns around. And he says, Louis, what the hell are you doing here? What am I doing here? I'm working. What are you doing here? He says, I'm working. So it was a neat thing. I always got along well with him.
Yeah.
On the 50th thing that they just did, he presented my wife with a great bottle of wine. So he was part of that ceremony, which was great.
That was a
great thing to happen.
It was amazing to see cool. that.
But the Olympics was a lot of fun. Well, commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But worth it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For sure. It's
just for the swag.
Exactly.
It speaks a lot about you, though, that you're the guy they called. So I definitely wanted to bring that up.
Nice of you.
Talking about your special night a few weeks ago, it was a real special moment, I thought, after the game with a former Flyer, Anthony Stolarz, coming over, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I got to know Stoli when he was here, and he had a cup of coffee here. But he would always – he was a great guy. He always participated in things that help people. And, they would say to the players, we're going to be with some crippled kids that play hockey or something like this, who can go there? And I would go, I would announce a game, and a couple of players would go. It was always Stoli was always in those players.
Yeah.
So I got to know him that way, and always liked them. And sure enough, end of the game, I'm still doing on that special night. I'm working downstairs, and hadn't all year, and so I'm announcing, next game is so and so, and here we are, we lost again. Next game is so-and-so, and I look up and I see Stoli coming over. And he came all the way over to me to congratulate me and say hello. It's just such a classy thing from a terrific guy.
Yes.
They don't come any better. And I said, boy, this guy's got it,
Yeah.
I don't know how long he'll be in hockey, but whatever he decides he'll do, he's going to be successful at it because he's a good man.
Yeah, we were there and with some of the Warrior guys, Philadelphia Warriors. We were standing there talking, and I saw him skate over, and I'm like, that's Stoli.
Yeah, Stoli's awesome.
I thought that was really, really cool.
That Warriors thing is so terrific. I did some of the games, and they actually now have three teams, as you well know.
Yeah.
And, I'm former Marine, so I connected with a few of those guys there. And one of the games, like the primary A team or whatever, was playing against Colorado, I think, over at the skate zone.
We were there.
And there was nobody to open the door. So I'm announcing, and somebody's run the clock. I'm doing the penalties. They didn't go in right away. There was like a dust up, nasty game.
We were there. It was awesome.
Brad didn't like it, but
everyone else did.
I'm saying to the guy from Colorado, I says, you're in. He called you, and I says, he gives me a fuck you, He gives me shit, and they went after him. Our guy.
Oh, good.
Because they could connect with me. They attacked the guy. I said, oh, jeez.
You're always stirring shit, Lou, in the box.
It just happens. But, I think that's a great program. And
it really is,
It is.
Marshy and, has done a great job leading that. And those guys I can't say enough.
Yeah.
They're wonderful. They gave me a jersey.
Oh, awesome.
That's awesome.
With 50 on it in my name.
Yep. That's awesome.
That day, they came down into the first period and presented me with that.
Great group of guys. We're really tight with those guys.
Yeah, Rob Bear.
Yeah.
Job with
them. Rob, yep.
Rob's terrific.
Done a hell of a job.
Yeah, it's terrific,
Yeah. Well, before you, before we let you go, you've made thousands of calls in 50 years. Your signature call, Pico Power Play. How does this, evolve to what it is today?
Well, several years ago, I don't know how many, I was told that the Power Play is going to be sponsored. So you'll have to say so-and-so Power Play. Okay. I know we were the first to do it. And so we get it. A Power Play, and I say, the Flyers are going on the Pico Power Play. So my producer says, no. He says, more, you got to give it more. So two or three times, and then finally it gets to where I'm, like it is now, and it's its own life. It's it just is. Amazing. I don't know how long Pico will have it, but they have it now. And I don't know who would take it after, but probably somebody from Comcast or something like that, if and when they don't do it.
Right.
But, you know, it's amazing. And it's like, you know, it's gone. And what it is, and the Flyers are going on the Pico Power Play.
Beautiful.
That's it. Baller,
give
how
me shivers,
are your ears?
Man. Give me shivers.
I
yeah.
know, man. You talk about getting chills. That's awesome, man. And it's amazing how, I think I heard you saying one time, talking about, like, obviously season ticket holders, but kids growing up. Maybe like, you know, you see him and you say hi, and then parents are like, this Pico Power Play, it's Mr. Lou, and they're like, oh, and, you know, they know, right?
Yeah, what they don't know is who I am. But
they know the voice.
But I see Pico somebody, Power Play.
And I'm walking down, and they'll say, hey, how you doing? I'm so-and-so. I've been here ticket holder for so long and all, and they say, yeah, this is the announcer Lou Nolan, and they go, who? And then I say, Pico Power Play guy. And they say, oh! Yeah.
Of course.
So it's amazing. It's just, yeah. It is what it is.
That you should be getting paid, Pico. You should be paying this man.
Yeah, right? You get some royalties.
I mean, everybody knows Pico Power Play.
100%.
You know what I mean? It is amazing.
Well, years ago, they did a, you know, the thing at Staples, you know? That was easy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
And they did one just like that. It has a Flyers logo on it. And I did a couple of things, and they did 3,000 of them and gave them away one night at the Flyers game. And then we did 300 of them again for their people from Pico who wanted it. So I get paid a little bit, you know. But
yeah.
I don't get paid every time. But that's a good idea.
You know, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Probably kept that sponsor alive for all these
yeah,
years.
Yeah, no, I mean,
well, people get that don't have any them. Choice, you know. I mean, they're going to be Pico or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, right, that's awesome.
On. Well, we appreciate you, Lou.
Yeah.
You know, you got a little bit of a trek home. And
people don't know how long this actually took.
Right.
Yeah, well, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and, you know, on Nasty Knuckles because it just means a lot that guys that are your friends want you to be part of what is important to them. So I thank you, too.
Oh, please.
I appreciate that.
We're honored to have you. Honored to have you, for sure. Absolute legend.
Yeah, quite the career.
We appreciate you. Yeah,
50 years is
no
joke.
And my son Elvis is your good buddy, and Lou always held a spot for him, and he would always say, "I got your spot, Elvis." So Elvis used to stand beside Mr. Lou and give the boys the knocks as they went out. So he was always
Elvis the best.
He was always looking for Mr. Lou. So anyway, you know, it's funny too. Real quick, I know you got to go, but. When we were at a game a few weeks ago, well, your game, the 50th anniversary night, you were back in your normal spot. And then the next game we went to, he's asking me, where's Mr. Lou? Because I was like, we went down for warm-ups, or close, because Provy said, I'll throw you a puck tonight. So we were down there, and I'm looking for you, right? And I can't see. And I was like, he should be in here because you were there that one game. I thought you were back.
Yeah.
And he's losing it the whole game. He's not in there. And I'm like, I think he's in there, buddy. But where we're sitting, we couldn't see. And then someone, one of the intern girls came over, Mary, sweetheart. She came over, and she's like, no, he's not in there. He's up there. I was like, oh, sorry, bud. I was telling him you were in there.
I like, may no, be there not. Tomorrow night.
Oh, really? Okay, for the last game of the season?
Yeah, for the final.
All right.
Game.
All right. Well, anyway, we appreciate you so much, Lou. You are the man. And let's just keep do another 50. Why not?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. I want to be able to see. I have to do it. Well, but it's good. It's thank you. I appreciate it. And I don't know. Maybe, 10?
Five. Yeah, let's do it.
There you go.
Whatever you want. When you're, you know, you do it as long as you want because you're the man.
Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.